So from cultivating the empty field by hunger, self and other the same. All dharmas are innately amazing beyond description. Perfect vision has no gap. In mountain groves, grasslands, and woods, the truth has always been exhibited. Discern and comprehend the broad, long tongue of the Buddha's teaching, which cannot be muted anywhere. The spoken is instantly heard. What is heard is instantly spoken. Senses and objects merge. Principle and wisdom are united. When self and other are the same, mind and dharmas are one. When you face what you have excluded and see how it appears, you must quickly gather it together and integrate it. Make it work within your house. Then establish stable sitting. And two verses by Wu Men from the Wu Men Kan. With realization, all things are one family. Without realization, everything is separate and different. Without realization, all things are one family. With realization, everything is separate and different. The moon and the clouds are the same. Mountains and valleys are different. All are blessed. All are blessed. Is this one? Is this two? So is this day one, or is this day 18, or maybe 37? We have these numbers, we have these ways we keep track of our lives. Now for me, 62 and a half years old. And I'm always tempted to say, already the beginning of retreat, already the second day, already the last full day of our coming and going, Sesshin. We don't know where it comes from, and we don't know where it goes. Yet how vivid. The experience of each moment. And the great gift of practice, of sitting in these chairs, sitting on these cushions, the gift of this stillness, of being alone together, is the gift that we can begin to appreciate our life. Such a very rare thing to do. Such a very difficult thing to do. We're constantly distracted. And so here in our Zazen, we gather ourselves again and again. As George said the other day, we tie down the buffalo to give him his medicine, the medicine of the elixir of breath. And this conglomeration of combustion that is, we call a human being. Millions, trillions of cells, each one making tiny explosions of oxygen, burning up. This morning out early, I was out with our old snowblower, quite a combustion engine. It's like the modern equivalent of the water buffalo, the Worcester equivalent of the water buffalo snowblower. And this morning the snow is slushy and heavy, and the snowblower quite loud and clunky, and quite a thing to control this machine. When we first got a snowblower, I thought, oh, now everything will be fine. Now I have a snowblower. And, you know, I had pictures of these people sort of strolling behind the snowblower, and the snow goes in a beautiful arc up over the hill. It's actually not like that. But I guess that's a little bit like, ever see those pictures of monks in Japan sitting in front of the rock garden, and it's so beautiful, and it's all carefully combed, and we're always being sold some bill of goods, right? And then we get on the cushion and we sit still, and we encounter the clunky combustion of ourself, and maybe a little too much oil or not enough oil, or it starts going into the snowbank or stalls out. But this morning with me and the snowblower, it was quite lovely, and moments where I find my way, and we're just clearing the sidewalk. And indeed, the slush and the snow goes up in this beautiful arc. And when you don't go too fast and don't go too slow, then joining in with snowblower. So it is joining in with our life. Every morning we wake up. Rumi says every morning we wake up tired and scared. And he encourages us to open beyond our fear. Fear and joy, amazing dharmas, terrible dharmas, all are blessed, all are blessed. And in some ways our zazen is our prayer. Not prayer of the words calling out, but our prayer to life, our turning our heart toward what we love, toward what is most precious. And this prayer, this calling out, this heading beyond the self, human beings, we all construct these worlds, these identities that are so important. This relative narrative we carry, so important in the world, and yet so painful when we get stuck in it. And we've been exploring over these past weeks so many different aspects of the Dharma. But this separate sameness and separateness, one of the themes, one of the great themes, the relative and the absolute. But part of our work in practice, in Zen, is to see through the delusion of a separate self. From consensual reality, we are disconnected from everything. We are actors on the stage of life, dealing with forces beyond our control, just trying to get by. But when we see deeper into the matter, when we fully participate in hearing the sound of the dripping of the melting snow off the roof. When we truly feel the warmth of the room as we sit together, we can begin to taste for ourselves, to experience this vast, unlimited life that is not dependent on the little I, is not comprehensible to the one who does the thinking. But one of the things I so appreciate about our Zen tradition is the valuing both sides. I remember one of my first encounters with George when we were talking now many years ago, and one of the things I have struggled with so much of my life is a feeling of separateness. Some of my earliest memories as a very young boy are feeling quite separate from this world and trying to figure out what was going on and how I might find a place. Never occurred to me that I already had a place. But I was talking with George about this feeling of separation. And he suggested that separation is part of togetherness. In fact, is quite a wonderful thing. Because in my mind, it's either I'm connected or I am separate. But once, perhaps once we begin to taste the connection that can never be broken, there is no such thing as a human being outside of air and gravity, outside of the context. We say foreground and background, we say me and the world, but there is no me without the world and no world without me. And so to appreciate the separation, and was thinking about this, what Hungjer says about not excluding anything. He says, when you face what you have excluded and see how it appears, you must quickly gather it together and integrate with it. Make it work within your house. So generally, when I hear this teaching, and it feels like such an important one, that we are actually, as Viktor Frankl titled his book, we are practicing saying yes to everything. And we've talked at length about these parts of ourself that we have excluded, the parts that don't measure up, the parts that are not acceptable, that we spend actually so much energy trying to manage and polish and transform. And we continually say, this is not self-improvement. We are not trying in the normal way to be better people, to improve the self, but trying to appreciate the self. So these dark places, the places of separateness or loneliness, sadness, anger, anxiety, you name yours, I'll name mine, are places of great energy, energy that is locked, that is unavailable. And we've said how when we encounter this discouragement, this darkness, the instruction is to do nothing. You don't bring it out to light so that you can give it a haircut and a new suit of clothes to send it out. But to meet that part of us, to meet ourselves in all of the rawness that we can barely stand. So painful to look, and I have so many stories about these parts of me, and how if only they were different, if only I were different. So in this practice we begin to do that, and that is work that requires enormous courage and enormous determination. But as I was reading this passage this morning, actually last night before I went to bed, and then this morning I woke up. Actually, I didn't wake up. I was awakened quite vividly at around 3:30 on these retreats, and actually other times, sometimes we are awakened. Usually we say this is what we're going for, but in the middle of the night, most of us not heading toward awakening. Can I get some rest? But we are filled with energy. Sometimes we call it good, sometimes we don't call it good. But I was awakened, had found myself awake at 3:30, pondering what is important to say. What do I know? Where do I head? And I was thinking about this particular text, and suddenly this face what you have excluded shifted for me from negative to positive. Seeing that not only have we excluded those parts we don't find acceptable, but we have excluded our great heart, our great power, our great vivid intelligence. We have banished ourself from ourself. All of us have been told at some point, you're too much. You're smarty pants. Who do you think you are? Who are you to know? Who are you to say, to open your mouth? And so we have all learned to hide. It got us through. Not a bad thing. We have all gotten here. But part of our Zen training is to claim our own voice. To claim our own Dharma. And each one of us has a particular Dharma, has a particular gift. And the gift is not separate from who you are. So it is so very hard to see. Melissa and I have a friend who teaches workshops about finding your voice. And one of the exercises he does is he asks people to think about what it is that they wished someone had told them. Like, what is it about life that you wished you were told when you were young? And actually told in a way that you could actually hear. But what is it? What have you learned about life now? From this place sitting, what is the truth that you have come to from your many years, from your many wanderings and failures and successes? For me, I think it's It's really okay. It's really okay to be yourself. It's really okay to be wild and unusual. It's really okay to be happy. It's really okay to be sad. It's really okay to show up as yourself. still learning this, but whatever it is for you, what is it that you have learned you wish someone had told you? And then he said, this is what you have to preach to the world. He then has his workshop participants go around saying this thing to each other. Each one of us has some innate wisdom that has never before appeared on the face of the earth. No matter how many great Zen teachers we quote, no one has had your wisdom, has had the spark that is manifest through you. And so some of our practice is facing that which we have excluded, of owning that which we already know, that person whom we already are. This is like the fish swimming in the sea, trying to understand what water is. We at some level assume that whatever we have is just normal. Well, doesn't everybody delight in the smell of daffodils in the spring? Doesn't everyone delight in seeing the faces of 4-year-olds when they come together with their teacher at reading time? Doesn't everyone delight in solving problems and making things happen, in cooking food, in bringing a group of people together, in solving a difficult problem? And this is the uniqueness, this difference, this separateness that is so important to honor, that as we sit, we are exploring life itself in the form of our very life. And as we touch this heart of hearts, we grow in love and understanding. But in this world of difference, each of us something unique, and each of us is required to come forth as ourself. It's one of the wonderful paradoxes of our koan practice is, though there are answers, in quotes, though there are directions to go with each koan, some place, some path that opens, you can only enter as yourself. And our shikantaza is none other than this. Showing up as ourself. And so as we sit in the zendo, each one of us is already preaching our dharma. So we all sit on the chair, feet on the ground, sit on the cushion, sit upright. And though we say we are all taking the same posture, of course we're not. Each one of us in our silence and in our coming back to this moment, in our doing our best, is sharing ourself, is teaching. Each one of us a teacher here. Each one of us manifesting as best we can this true self. for me much easier to see this in other people than in myself. Right? To maybe easiest to see in young children. Each one of them so clearly bringing some new flavor, some new delight into the world. And so it is with each one of us. We have to, we are invited to trust that which we cannot stand outside. There is no yardstick that will measure this because it has not happened. But it has happened. It has already been given to you. A treasure so precious beyond anything you could ever find, and it is nowhere else. If you look for it outside yourself, you will never find it. There's a wonderful passage from Martha Graham that actually our daughter gave to me now many years ago, and she's talking to artists, but she's talking about the vitality, the unique expression that each one of us is. And she says here, it is not your business to determine how good it is, nor how it compares to other expressions. It is your business to keep yours clearly and directly, to keep the channel open. You do not even have to believe in yourself or your work. You have to keep open and aware directly to the urges that motivate you. So it is not your business to determine if you are okay or how good. Well, mine isn't quite as good. We can't know. Coming forward here in the Taisho, for me, I can't know if it's good enough. I hope. And at moments, it's quite clear to me, of course. How could good enough, not good enough, are not relative here. But what is relative is for us to participate, to be willing to step into that great unknowing, to step off of the flagpole, to step into our life again and again, to step beyond whatever we have made up, to step beyond whatever we have been told about playing nice and keeping our mouths shut. Right? So we can practice this, this manifesting in our zazen. This is not about saying a certain thing, but this is about aligning with the vitality of our lives. And when we do this, then we are participating in what is already here. Don't think that it is not happening just because you're not aware of it. I think in the harmony of relative and absolute, it says, if you do not see the path, you do not see it even as you walk on it. Right? You cannot be anyone else. This is, as I love to say, the good news and the bad news. How wonderful to share with you, to be nourished and indeed taught by each one of you. In your silence and stillness, in words, in Dharma dialogue, in your working and walking, we are a great stew of difference. Each one of us participating, each one of us manifesting the whole world lifetimes in each step, each breath. Thank you. So I invite you to sit comfortably. We'll have our Dharma dialogue. Yeah, Chris.
I am so grateful to be here and very grateful for your talk. Every aspect of my personal, professional, and spiritual life is in upheaval right now. And I have been reading weather forecasts with great terror out of the fear that I was not going to be able to come today. And I woke up at 3 as well. And the gift I think that you gave me just now, which I'm going to acknowledge, is this: the 6 words, the clunky combustion of the self. I think that there is something remarkable about this practice that affords you in every situation the ability to take that step back and not distance yourself from it, but actually watch the clunky combustion and appreciate it for what it is. And that, I think, is the primary sort of manifestation of what's happening in this period where so much is changing and there's very little solidity. You know, I think things keep getting coughed up. And I tend to think of things that get coughed up in a negative way. And there's something very reassuring, if somewhat impossible, about constantly going back to those hairballs and treating them as gifts. It's just a really profound... That turning to look at those things in those moments. As I said when I was here a couple of weeks ago, it doesn't make your toes less cold.
Right.
But that gift of turning back to that clunky combustion and loving it is really an amazing thing. Mm. It's a really amazing thing. So I'm terribly grateful for your time.
Thank you. Well, and it's I think you put it well about the turning. There is a turning here, and we've been talking about that, and turning to the thing itself, not going somewhere else, but appreciating clunky, looks good, looks terrible, that what we're looking for already happening, but requires a turning, because we're past it. We think we're solving some other problem, so I appreciate you pointing us this way. Thanks. Yeah, Christine.
I echo that. What a precious, precious, precious jewel your talk was to leave this sesshin with. And I thank you from the depths of my heart. It feels... better than a whole banquet and bouquet of flowers. And as I listen to you, and I also am, where am I going? You know, what am I going to do professionally, as everything has been turned completely upside down in a very long-term experience where I've been completely humbled and broken and rebuilt. And as I listen to you and that saying that we've read a few times in this sesshin, I can't make my house come in order, but it is coming in order in ways in this sesshin that are miraculous to me by just, as best as I'm able, being with what comes up and not, but still being here and breathing and I don't even know how this has happened, but all those parts that I pushed away for so long, as if I could just, and the older I got, of course, the larger it got and the smaller part of what was acceptable. And just accepting all of that because I've had no choice. Mm-hmm. And also what has been miraculous to me in the sesshin is that I have spent a lifetime distancing myself from the disgrace of my family, where three of my family members died in active addiction, and then my own time in addiction. And as all of that just came in alignment here, there was just one moment, and I don't even know how it happened, in which I just felt so much love for my family, and just embracing them. But it happened, it just happened. And I don't even know how it did, and it doesn't matter. And what I feel like I've experienced here in your talk of this reintegration, which happened, I've tried to make it happen for a long time and come up with nada.
Yeah.
Is when I was 19, I worked the end part of my undergraduate in a county hospital, and I was afloat in the graveyard shift. And I would often, I loved the part you said about the outrageous questioning, and I would often see things different. I always often did from a lot of people, and I was a bit troublesome to them. And this night I ended up in the psych ward. I mean, not me, but...
Be clear, right?
And there was this guy that was brought in, and he was... They considered him one of the most dangerous, and they brought him in a straitjacket and everything. And I said, I think he just needs a hug. And, I mean, I don't think I would have the courage to do that now. I don't know. And they thought, well, this is great. Let's put her in a padded cell with him. We'll put security guards up. She'll get beat up a little bit. And then she'll learn her lesson, and she won't question anything anymore. And I remember him and I being in there, and they took off the straitjacket and slowly talking and walking to him, and then he collapsed in my arms sobbing. And I feel like that's what's happened to me in this sesshin, is and I haven't done it, just showing up in those places come together in the way that you're saying. And in listening to you today, some things started coming together about directions to take. I am so humbled about how I don't do anything. The best I can do is show up, and I barely got here today. It was a harrowing drive home last night. And I remembered what you said. I could just show up with 25% of me, and I'm so glad I did. Thank
you. Well, I think that, you know, it's so... This thing about agency and who's doing it, you know, Hungjir starts, all the dharmas are amazing beyond, all dharmas are innately amazing beyond description. And that's what you're reporting, that we move into our life and it's not the little one, the little person who does it. And we don't, nobody knows how this happens, right? But we can verify for ourselves, as you did. You have testified, you know, that you have been touched by something that is incomprehensible, and the gratitude that arises is beyond measure. So thank you so much, Christine.
So hi, my name is Paul. I'm glad I showed up today and made the effort to get here, and hearing you know, what you said about, I can't quote you exactly, but just, you mentioned something about, you know, just showing up as you are and being okay with it, even if it's wild and crazy. And just coming off of some of the conversation that's already arose,
Yeah, the last time that I sat in this room, it's a couple of years ago, maybe a day and a half after that, I ended up in the psych ward. And I stayed in the psych ward. And during your session, am I saying it right?
Mm-hmm.
I called and called and called.
Right.
Many, many times.
I remember. Mm-hmm.
And it's refreshing just to hear someone say it's okay to be yourself. You know, and I have to keep in mind that, yes, oftentimes I woke up at 3:30 in the morning too.
Wow.
You know? Maybe not at that exact time.
Yeah.
You know, and I wasn't thinking about this, you know, I was thinking about work.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I work in a psych hospital. My job is to share my experience of receiving services and being on that end with oh. the people that are,
yeah.
you know, because I've been there and I've done that and, you know, and I've, yeah, I'm talking too much about myself now, but just thank you.
Mm. Well, it's good to see you here. It's so nice to hear your voice. And what wonderful work to be serving at Bodhisattva in that situation.
Yeah, I wanted to second that. My teacher, Sung San, used to say, perceive your karma and then use your karma. So, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, Cindy.
I'm still trying to find out what that is. It's like I realize, and I realize it goes really, really deep back into being a small child, where I didn't have a voice that was accepted in my family of origin, and I was given a number of pretty cool skills along the way, but not the self-esteem to realize that I had a voice, that I had action in the world, that I had an impact beyond the wallpaper. And I still have trouble finding my voice when it's for me. One of the gifts of my life was having children, and then I finally understood the fierceness of wild animals, you know, and it gave me the motivation to somehow find a voice for me too, because I could see they deserved it. You know what? I couldn't give what I didn't have. Mm-hmm. I saw that somewhere along the line. So I needed to acquire more of that.
Mm.
I haven't been to work since last Wednesday about 11 in the morning because I was having trouble breathing in the office because of a flood from all the lovely ice and the dripping in on a rug and then the treatment moldy rug. And I didn't want to make trouble. I didn't want to have to leave. I didn't want to make trouble. I still don't want to make trouble, but I've stirred up a pile of it. Mm. And I can't help that my boss is upset. And
right.
I'll have to do what I have to do. If I'm, you know, all the symptoms have gone away on Monday morning, I'll show up for work again. But it's like I have to do what I have to do, you know. As I said to my boss, I gotta breathe, you know.
You're so self-centered.
I know.
You and your breath.
Yeah.
That should be optional. I remember something from Pema Chodron's book, When Things Fall Apart, Hard Advice for Difficult Times, and she says something about her ex-husband saying she was really courageous because she was afraid of everything and did it anyway.
Mm.
And sometimes I think on that, and sometimes I think on the part of the book where, you know, she remembers being riveted in the moment from some bad news from her husband. And she's like, you know, there was the steam on my tea in the sunlight, and then I picked up a rock and threw it at him. Sometimes that seems to be the response that I have.
Yeah.
Maybe not the most skillful one, but it's real.
Yeah, well, I think you speak to the ongoing nature of this, so it can sound like, oh yeah, well, it's like the awakening, and once you get awakening, you're cool. You know, just keep it in your pocket, right? And so, but it's this constant emerging, because we don't know. We might know who we were or what, how to manifest then, but we're always called beyond the idea, and we don't really know who we are and cannot know. So it's this emerging quality that we practice on the cushion. Right? How do we trust that? Of course, with our bosses, with our partners, but we get to practice with ourselves here. Can we trust that we will be taken care of, that we can show up fully as ourselves here in this context? Yeah, thank you. Yeah, Jean.
So I have a really disgusting example of a lesson that came about while I was here unexpectedly. It was a while back, and I was emptying the porta potty.
Advanced practice. Yeah. Advanced then practice.
Exactly.
That's
right.
What I was told my
Don't.
First issue.
It's still true, Jason. We only give it to people with a lot of promise, a lot of attainment.
So I'm dunking out the porta potty, and you know, some liquid comes out, and I thought, oh, great, what a relief, that wasn't so bad. So I gave it another little shake, and kawump, all this stuff came out, and I thought, oh yeah, tissue, people would have put stuff in there. And then I just, like, started laughing, because, the easy thing is to get the natural stuff out, but it's the stuff we've added that keeps all this up. And you have to work at that. So it was pretty great.
I love that story. That is so true. Thank you so much.
The teaching of the porta potty.
Yeah, I recommend it.
Well, on that note, let's continue our study and practice.